Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Japanese. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Saori Kawano, who is the founder and the president of Korean Japanese Trading Corporation, which sells Japanese knives and tableware through wholesale and at her cool shop in Korean, called Korean in Tribeca. And she's also the founder of the Gohan Society, a non-profit organization which promotes culinary and cultural exchange between the U.S. and Japan. Hello and welcome to the show. So most chefs in New York have Japanese knives nowadays, and they say that is a result of your hard work to educate them. So first, how did you get into the knife business?
I got into knife and tableware business in 1982 because growing up in Japan, I always had a passion for traditional Japanese products. So when I moved to New York City in 1978 and saw that Western chefs did not have Japanese knives and tableware, so that's why I thought I can introduce very good Japanese tableware and knives.
Right. Yeah. Okay, but I would imagine it was not easy to sell Japanese knives here 30 years ago. And what was the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge was Japanese knives. Even the shape is Western style. The usage is totally different, and the Western chefs are rocking the knives when they cut, but the Japanese chefs don't rock the knives when they cut. So the blade shape and thinness is it's very delicate. Japanese knives are made to use in a very fine cutting. So I had a lot of claims and the returns and the complaints, and it was really a nightmare.
It's broken already. What happened?
So I tried to introduce and educate to the Western chefs by making English brochures, but it didn't work well.
Okay,
first time. Then I kept making more pages of catalogs by introducing how the Japanese craftsmen are making Japanese knives and who are admiring Japanese knives.
Okay. Like
such a very famous chefs, Jean George, Chef Daniel, they loved Japanese knives. So I asked those highly acclaimed chefs to talk about Japanese knives, and it worked.
That's a good strategy. But sounds like you said earlier, you know, the Japanese chefs don't look at their hands when they cut things, so it sounds like it's a part of their hands.
Yes. The chef always says that knives are extension of the hands.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. Right. Okay. And I mean, Japanese knives are not only extremely functional, but also a form of art, I think. And it took centuries to get there. So what is the history of Japanese knives?
We can trace the history of Japanese knives back more than 1,200 years to the traditional samurai sword makers. But after World War II, samurai sword making were banned. So sword makers turned their skills to making all knives of chef's knives. Today, professional chefs and serious amateur chefs use Japanese knives in their kitchens because they want the same high level of craftsmanship and materials that went into those ancient samurai swords.
Mm. Right. If you can kill people, you can cut fish very well. That's the reason. Okay. And there were a couple different regions I heard in knife making in Japan. So
yes, there are two major regions in Japan that produce knives. Traditional Japanese knives, like the yanagi, that the long thin blade, the long blade knife that you see the sushi chefs are slicing fish in your favorite sushi bar.
Mm-hmm. Right, the yanagi means a willow, so it's like a very smooth, light, long.
Very not all smooth and a long one, and it's just the slicing the fillet.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it's called the sashimi.
Yes, many people say sashimi knife, and those traditional Japanese knives are made in Sakai City in Osaka.
Right.
And there's a Western style Japanese knives.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, most of the Western kitchens or American home chefs are using at home. These are made in Seki City in Gifu Prefecture.
Okay, so sounds like Sakai has longer history than Seki.
The both cities has a long history. It's just the their specialty was different from the beginning. Mm-hmm. The Sakai City has a long history since the 15th century, and they started making tobacco knives.
That came from Portuguese people holding tobacco leaves, and then...
Yes, and Sakai City has a canal, so they are very active for trade.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I heard the Lord who preferred tobacco, the thin cut in tobacco leaves. So they granted a kind of craftsman's special seal for good knife makers.
And they had a good location, and also they started making gun from Portuguese. They copied a gun.
Right.
So then as they started making tobacco knives and the gun, all the craftsmen started gathering to Sakai City. That's why when we talk about the highest quality professional Japanese knives, Sakai City is the number one city.
Yeah, I found the statistics that 90% of professional chef knives are made in Sakai.
Yes.
So that's amazing. Right. So what is the process of knife making?
There's about 23 different steps on the processing.
Wow, 23.
But basically, there's four craftsmen. It's a teamwork. At the beginning, blacksmith makes the body from a raw material. And sometimes they combine two different steels into one, like a soft iron with steel to put together.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes the higher quality knives are made only by steel only. Mm-hmm. So it's a very hard and rigid. So there's no flexibility at all.
Mm-hmm.
So after blacksmith made the body, it goes to blade making craftsman
to someone else, completely different,
completely different
person.
In the same area. It's a teamwork, so it's just the walking distance.
After lunch, can you make this?
Bring two blade making craftsmen, and then blade making craftsmen start making the angle to make the edge.
Mm.
Then finish the complete blade.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes to handle-making craftsman.
Mm.
Then after handle-making craftsman, there's saya leaves. It's like a wooden cover to protect the blade.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically four different craftsmen makes one knife.
Wow. Well, I'm sure with all the family, each of the craftsmen's family lasted for centuries. And they have family relationships.
Yeah, it's a family business usually. Mm-hmm. It's generation to generation. They pass on their special skills and knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So usually one person only does one part. So
yes.
Even still now.
Even still now. Even among blacksmiths, some blacksmiths makes only yanagi, the sashimi knife.
Oh, wow.
And some makes only deba, like a butchering knife.
Mm.
There's three different kind of traditional Japanese knives. Deba, it's a butchering knife.
Mm-hmm.
And yanagi, the sashimi knife,
mm-hmm.
a slicing knife. And usuba, it's mm-hmm. a vegetable peeling or right. dicing knife.
Okay, so yes. I'm going to ask you later about the details
sure.
and you know, when people want to buy it. So these are the three main ones.
Yes.
And so each family, one family is specialized in
yes.
the usuba or yanagi.
Yes.
Right, it's amazing.
Yes, and usually the highest level craftsmen team up.
Mm-hmm.
Or like it's very interesting mm-hmm. that to make one highest quality knives, you need the highest ranking mm-hmm. craftsman's team,
okay.
or middle range or beginner's range.
Mm-hmm.
So all the team have to be in the same level.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounds like the top team can,
yes.
you know, the knives are really expensive. And,
yes.
Right? Wow, it's amazing. So I also heard this process is so time consuming. And I heard even like the top, you know, knife companies can only produce 10 to 12 knives per day.
Yes.
That's very few.
Very few. Yes.
So it's
the price is expensive, but after you see all the processing mm-hmm. and the time and the efforts,
mm.
you can't feel it's expensive.
Mm. You feel maybe honored to
yes.
have one of those. Right. But I heard that the number of knife craftsmen is seriously declining.
Yes, yeah. The average age of a craftsman in Sakai City is around 70.
Okay, wow.
Yes, so we don't want to say dying craftsmanship.
Mm.
That's why I've been working hard to introduce this special artisanal work to overseas mm. customers. If we have a market, next generation, mm. younger generation will be very interested into mm. this, goes into this field.
Mm. How many are they right now?
About 50 craftsmen.
Wow.
That's it.
Only 50?
Only 50 craftsmen in Sakai City.
Mm.
And to make a real highest quality knives,
mm-hmm.
only around 5.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all in 70 to 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wow. So, I mean, they considering Sakai knives producing 90% of professional knives, they must be really hardworking.
And so, and nowadays popularity is in overseas
mm-hmm.
requires so many orders mm-hmm. are coming to Sakai City,
mm-hmm.
so they can't catch up. Sometimes 6 months are waiting,
mm-hmm.
1 year waiting.
Right, wow.
Yes, yes.
So I remember one time I went to Kyoto and there was a famous knife store.
Ah, yes.
And Alain Ducasse was purchasing
yes.
a couple of different
Everyone
knives.
Everyone goes there because it's in a very nice fish market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very nice store. You can see beautiful knives and mm-hmm. Handcrafted kitchen utensils and mm-hmm. copper pans and pots.
Right, yes. And the they carve your name.
Yes.
Even almost, it's better than the handwriting. It's just like carving into
Yes, carving
knives.
Into knives.
Right.
I forgot, not only for craftsmen, mm-hmm. the name carving craftsmen is
oh.
very important.
Right.
At the final stage,
mm-hmm.
They carve a knife brand
mm.
or customer's name.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah. Five craftsmen's
Amazing.
Teamwork.
Right. Yeah, it really makes sense because it's such a precious, almost like a jewelry or something.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so the reason that nobody wants to succeed that craftsmanship because it's too hard to remember, like memorize everything, train yourself. It's like an old ancient practice.
Yes.
That's why young people don't want to do it.
I think it's a really very hard work.
Mm-hmm.
For example, blacksmiths
mm-hmm.
Forged the one knife from raw material
mm-hmm.
To completed the body, more than 300 pounding by hammers.
Wow.
By hand.
Wow.
Yes, and you have to sit in front of fire, in front of a kiln. You have to watch the fire, and the fire temperature changes. As temperature changes, fire color changes. So you have to really watch the fire, but it's really hard work, and it's not really so financially rewarded compared to the other, like IT or banking or financial. So only if they are recognized by overseas customers for their artisanal work, they'll be very motivated.
Right.
But otherwise, if no one is interested in, they don't want to really take over father's very hard work.
Right. Yeah. I think you might have extended their craftsmanship life maybe like 10 years already after your hard work.
Right. Yes.
So, right. But it's amazing. I saw a kind of video to show the knife hammering.
Yes.
It's not like heavy or big, you know, orange, sparkling orange color to, you know, ashy dark. And then you do it over and over again.
Over and over again, like around 300 times.
Wow.
By hammering this blade, it's purifying the blade material. And the blade cell become much more finer, so that when you cut the ingredients, you cut without stressing, like cutting the butter, and the sharpness stay very long, much longer than the other, like a German or French knives, because steel is very, very hard.
Okay. Right. So the grain is smaller, just cohesive to each other.
Yes.
Right, very tight. Okay. And so there are different kinds of Japanese knives, but typically I heard it is a one-sided and then two-sided difference.
Yes. Traditional Japanese knives are made one-sided blade. The one side is completely flat. The other side has a very steep angle, so it's a single-sided blade. That's why when you cut the ingredients, the blade is very super steep. So there's almost no angle to getting to the ingredients, so there's no resistance. No resistance.
Okay, right. And I mean, the large surface, straight surface touches the food, so like a fish, the sashimi gets prettier.
Yes, and the shinier.
Right. Interesting.
Yes.
Right. And the back side is slightly concave, so I heard the food doesn't stick.
Yes. Yes. Ah, because you know very well.
Because I eat a lot of sashimi. Right. So. So they also you know, some Japanese knives have, like I said earlier, soft metal and hard metal.
Yes.
Combined.
Yes.
So soft one is good for shock, going against the shock.
Yes. Soft iron gives you flexibility, but the hard one, it's a hard steel, the virgin steel, will give you the hardness. So by combining two different methods, you get the hard blade, because this hard steel goes only to the edge, and the body is a soft iron.
Okay.
So it gives you flexibility, yet the very sharp edge with like a longer sharpness.
Okay. Great. All right. So now let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about different kinds of Japanese knives.
Okay. Thank you.
Please stay with us.
Full service. We'll be right back.
following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Saori Kawano, who is the founder and the president of Korean Japanese Trading Corporation and the founder of the Gohan Society, a non-profit organization which promotes culinary and cultural exchange between the U.S. and Japan. So, are there many different types of Japanese knives? You mentioned, you know, earlier, deba, sashimi, usuba. So, yes. To tell us about, you know, different kinds and how it's used.
In Japanese knives, mm-hmm. or
yeah, right. Oh, so you said typically three
kinds. Mm-hmm. Besides these, they're all very interesting specific purpose knife, like unagi eel knife.
Okay, so let's start. Go back to the one.
This is
the top three.
Deba, mm-hmm. yanagi sashimi knife, mm-hmm. and usuba, the vegetable knife.
Okay, yes. So sometimes we say knives, but in Japanese it's hojo or bojo,
yes.
right? So sometimes we say deba knife, but deba bojo.
Deba bojo,
right.
Yes.
Okay, so deba is for...
Deba is the butchering knife. Mm. So if you have a whole fish, you chop like a butcher the head,
right.
and open a, like a fish body, mm-hmm. and cut into three different pieces, and remove the bone from the meat.
Mm. Yeah. So it's a thicker looking, and you can use the weight of the knife to
yes.
cut open.
Yes, thicker, and the shape is like a triangular
okay.
shape.
Right.
Yes, and thicker, heavier, and also there's all different sizes of deba knives because fish sizes are all different from a small, like a snapper, mm-hmm. or even smaller than snapper to a tuna fish.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of sizes in, of deba knives.
Right. So you can find a good one even for pork, for American chefs. Pork butchering or that big is maybe too big.
Yes.
Right. All right, just stick with fish.
Yeah.
And you said the second one?
Second one is a yanagi. We call yanagi because the shape is like a widow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fillet slicing knife. Mm-hmm. So you cut only the fillet.
Mm-hmm.
So the blade is very thin, mm-hmm. and very narrow. And very long, like most popular size is 11 inches to 12 inches long.
Mm.
And when you cut the sashimi, you cut in one stroke.
Okay.
You don't go back and forth.
Mm.
You cut in one stroke. That's why sushi chef or Japanese chef need a very long knife.
Right. Yeah. Because if you go back and forth, it gets a little ugly
yes.
on the surface.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. By the way, this sashimi knife, I found a little crazy story. So sashimi knife is called tokobiki in Kanto,
yes.
where Tokyo is.
Yes.
And Kansai yanagiba.
Yes.
It's, you know, the willow shape,
yes.
yanagiba in Kansai.
Yes.
And the shape is different. And you know, the Japanese, the tokobiki, the Kansai one, Kanto one in the Tokyo area, the head is square.
Yes.
And it's not as sharp as the Kyoto one. Because the Tokyo people back then, it's called the Edo people, were very quick to pick a fight.
Yes.
So... it was designed not to be used for hurting other people.
I didn't know.
It's just like
but the takobiki is taco in Japanese is octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Some people thought, it is the knife for cutting octopus. Mm. I said, no. This is just the name.
Huh.
The chefs who got training in like Tokyo or Kanto area, Tokyo mm-hmm. area, they always stick with the knives. They are like trained.
Okay.
Like your boss chef give
okay.
you the takobiki or the others,
mm-hmm.
like Tokyo style and the Kyoto style, Kansai style. Its shape is different.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been seeing the chefs who's buying Tokyo-style knives. I can assume, oh, they are trained in Tokyo. If the chefs are using Kyoto or Kansai knives, these chefs are trained in Kyoto. Yes, right. And they never change. Once they started using this, they stay.
Because you really have to have the skill to properly use that knife.
And even sashimi slicing knife, takobiki is just a straight cut down. Mm-hmm. It's not slicing. Mm-hmm. It's cut down.
Okay.
And yanagi sashimi knife is slicing by one stroke. Mm-hmm. So how to cut is also different. Right. Motion is different.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and so I also heard... Oh, the next one, the third one. Sorry.
Yes. Usuba. Mm-hmm. Usuba is a vegetable knife. You can peel and dice and slice. And Kanto or Tokyo style, usuba is like a rectangular shape.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyoto or Osaka, Kansai style, is a little rounder and pointier.
Mm-hmm.
And usuba is the most popular Japanese traditional knives for French chefs or Western chefs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, like, Western chefs don't cut the sashimi, but they do cut a lot of vegetables.
Oh, okay.
And it's super sharp, and you can cut thin slice, like a see-through thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the most popular traditional Japanese knives for Western chefs are usuba, the vegetable knife.
Okay. Yes. It sounds like really versatile. Even you can use it here in America for a lot of chefs.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And also heard that the Western-style two-sided knives exist in Japan too.
Yes.
So, but I heard that there's a difference between...
Yes. Like Western knives, like a German or French knives, are 50-50 side. The both side equally.
Like a V shape.
Yes. And the Japanese Western style knives are 30-70 ratio. So it's still the both sided, but the ratio is 30-70. So angle is steeper.
Right. So it's asymmetrical.
Yes.
Right. Interesting. And then why do they do that?
Why? Because Japanese cuisines are basically requires a lot of cutting and the slicing. So even though the Japanese chefs are cooking Western cuisine, they do need very sharp knives. To make the very sharp knives, the edge have to be steeper and thinner.
Right. So probably it's based on kaiseki cuisine, where seasonal ingredients are most beautifully presented.
Yes, right. Yes.
Okay, right. And how do you take care of Japanese knives? It sounds like it's very delicate. And do you have any special care?
Sounds very like too much work, but actually very easy. If you are a professional chef, end of the day, every day, end of the day, you just sharpen for 3 minutes. If you are a home chef, I don't sharpen for 1 year. I'm not cooking so much. So only when I feel like, whoa, my knife got so dull, you can feel. Right. Then I will sharpen a little bit.
Okay.
But if you feel dull, like my knife, then you need maybe 20, 30 minutes sharpening to get the sharpness back.
And you need the stone.
Stones, yes. Western, traditional Western way of sharpening, the chefs or home chefs are using steel. But we use stones. There's three basic stones. Rough to get the a blade back, and a medium for everyday's sharpening, and also fine stone for just the finishing and smoothing out the edge.
Right, like you said earlier, it's a part of the chef's hands. So.
Yes, yes. And end of the day, if you are a professional chef, you need to think about tomorrow's menu, and you need to think about today's work. then his sharpening knife is a very good meditation time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very, very relaxing time for 5 minutes, 3 minutes.
Mm.
Don't think about anything else. Nice. And just focus on sharpening the knife. So it's a very peaceful moment.
Mm.
And you can feel the same if even you are home chef. You can enjoy. And sometimes, one story.
Mm.
One customer called me and said, "Oh, I really enjoy sharpening the knives. I sharpen 4 or 5 hours. It's a home chef." I said, "This is impressive, but don't sharpen too long because you lose your blade so fast."
Maybe he's walking the temple instead. Right. Okay, and so you sell Japanese knives at your retail store, available to everybody, right? So how many types of knives do you sell?
Yeah, we have 17 brand and by 9 different makers, including our house brand.
Mm.
And we carry over 500 different knives.
Wow.
Different type of knives and the sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So what's the price range?
Price range is from less than $100, like $70-$80, to unlimited.
Right.
like $12,000, sometimes $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Chef Morimoto's knife is $20,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So price is varied, but the average, most popular price range is $100 to $300. And I can say maybe $150 range is the really, really most popular price range. And we do import directly from maker and the selling directory. So our price is very, very reasonable.
Right. Yes. And actually my mother has a very... I think it's a couple hundred dollars when she got married.
Yes.
And she still has it.
Ah, yes.
Yes, yes. And it's working so well, too. Mm. So it's a good investment, I think.
Yes. Think about when you go to the restaurant, if you go to a high-end restaurant for two person, you spend so much money, $300, $500 for two at the high-end restaurant. But knife, once you buy... It's yours for the rest of your life almost.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then you probably cook more at home.
Yes.
Get motivation, save money too.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Mm. And at the Corin, you have a wholesale too.
Yes.
But do you have any regular public customers, like regular consumers to buy?
There's so many. Mm. In our system, we have about 50,000 accounts, including end user customers or restaurants and overseas and all included, about 50,000 accounts. How do I know is because we are sending mass email newsletters twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
So we always count how many accounts we are sending.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it sounds like it's not just for chefs anymore.
No, not at all. There's so many serious home chefs are so into professional kitchen tools and knives and tablewares.
Mm. Right. So out of many types, what is your recommendation for beginners?
Beginners Japanese? For knives? I always recommend around $100 Western-style Japanese knives, 30-70 ratio.
Mm.
So it's still very sharp, but easy to maintain, and it's so enjoyable to cut things, and it's beautiful.
Right. Yeah. You can see the difference.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And, Santoku, I heard that was the most versatile.
Yeah, Santoku is a very, it's a still Western-style Japanese knives, but it's a very old-fashioned, traditional Japanese-style knives.
Mm.
Santoku means a three-purpose knife or all-purpose knife.
Mm.
You can use for meat, fish, vegetables, or anything.
Right.
Yes.
So, and it came, I heard it's after, Japan opened the country after 200 years of closed countries. So the meat came in to Japan, and people started to developed the two-sided Western-style knives.
Yes.
Santoku was one of them?
Yes, Santoku was one of them. There was we changed from Edo period to Meiji period, maybe 1868.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we started eating meat.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Right, it's amazing. Right. Okay, so let me ask you about the Gohan Society.
Yes.
Right. So you 2006, you founded this non-profit organization to foster U.S.-Japan culinary and cultural exchange.
Yes.
And you have organized multiple exchange programs for chefs, food journalists, and other individuals. So why did you start this organization?
Yes, why I started the Gohan Society was through Corinne's business experience.
Mm-hmm.
I started the selling the product to Japanese restaurants or Asian restaurants. And around the 1990 or 1991, I started selling to the Western restaurant like John George or the other high-end hotels or restaurants. And then I saw there's no interaction between Japanese chefs and Western chefs.
Mm.
So I'm going to be a culinary bridge between Japan and Western chefs.
Well, because they inspire each other by learning.
Yes.
So what kind of programs do you
have? We've been providing all the different kind of programs, classes.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good lecture of miso, soy sauce, mirin, or pickling, or the fish cutting in Japanese way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for both, sometimes for professional chefs only, sometimes mainly for end user customers, and sometimes for both audience. Yes. Sushi Zen restaurant's owner chef Suzuki, mm-hmm. Suzuki-san, has been our master chef to teach what is the Japanese way of cooking and what is the Japanese cuisine's fundamentals.
Right. Yeah. So Mr. Toshi Suzuki, he's been cooking here like 30, 40 years.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
So I think he knows everything.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. All right. So what was the past program? I heard you had an exchange program.
Yes. We've been sending the American chefs to Japan, Tokyo, Kyoto, and Ishikawa Prefecture to show how Japanese cuisine and the ingredients are used.
Okay. So Ishikawa is, more facing Japan Sea, and there's a beautiful peninsula and a very unique local cuisine culture.
In one prefecture, they have everything. They have a peninsula that means the seafood is really amazing, and craft, very famous. Lakaware, Washima Lakaware, Yamanaka Lakaware, and also Kutani ceramics, and Kaga cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
So sending the chefs to Kanazawa and Noto region is it's really good, and they have a wonderful sake breweries and soy sauce miso makers old fashioned traditional way of sea salt maker.
Okay. Yes. Wow. So just the whole entire experience of Japanese
in one region.
Right. So I'm curious, who went there for
in the past? Chef John George's son Cedric Monghilichten and Chef Chef Wiley Dufresne went to Kyoto and Osaka, Sakai City, but to Kanazawa and Noto, Chef Chris Mueller from the Bernardine Chef Travis from Bluesat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, sounds like a lot of chefs already.
A lot of chefs, yes. And this time, I am taking four chefs to Ishikawa, Kanazawa. The four chefs, one chef is Chef Joe from Aronda restaurant, Italian cuisine, and Chef Ben Pollinger from Oceana restaurant, and Chef Eric Bates from Star Restaurant Group, and Chef Damien from Denver, Colorado's restaurant. Yes.
Great. Wow. Okay. So that's amazing. And
This is a really fun, and it's a very educational for myself too. Traveling with Western chefs, they are asking me many questions I never thought about. Sometimes I can't answer because I never really even think about it. It's like air to me as Japanese, but for them it's very strange or curious or interesting.
Right. Yeah. That's the whole point of this exchange program.
Yes.
Right.
And this past January, end of January to beginning of February, Ishikawa Prefecture's, Kanazawa Prefecture's Kaiseki restaurants, chefs and owners came to have a same program.
Okay.
So it's becoming really exchange program. So
like
it's mutual both way.
Great.
Yes.
All right. So thank you for joining us today. Sorry, I think I wish we had more time.
Thank you very much.
So please come back.
Yes, thank you.
So listeners, if you'd like to know more about the Korean, please visit korean.com. And the Gohan site, it's
gohansociety.org.
Okay, yes. So it's G-O-H-A-N society.org. Okay. All right. And if you have any questions or comments, please contact us at theheritageradionetwork.org. And you can also reach me at kikokatayama.com. Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.